Listen, there has never been a better time to invest in self-storage, and there's no better team than ours to show you how to do it, because we wrote the book on how to invest in self-storage. Literally, we created the best-selling home study system titled How to Find, Evaluate, Purchase, and Manage Self-Storage Facilities. We have helped thousands of people launch and scale their self-storage business and have become the nation's go-to resource for all things self-storage. That's because we not only talk the talk, we walk the walk, day in and day out since 2005 through now, two recessions and amassing a 2.5 million square feet of self-storage, totaling over 15,000 doors nationwide. There is nobody else that has more experience in self-storage that is teaching people how to invest in self-storage. So if you're ready to launch and scale your self-storage business, then go to selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the events tab to grab your ticket to the upcoming Self-Storage Academy. So that again is selfstorageinvesting.com. Click on the events tab. Seating is limited. And on behalf of our team, we look forward to seeing you then. Take care. This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 16 years, has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated over 2 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of his incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, and this week's guest is Gene Trowbridge with the Trowbridge Law Group. Gene has been in the commercial and investment real estate business continuously since 1972 and in the legal profession since 1996. He earned a CCIM designation in 1977, and Gene continues to serve as a member of the CCIM faculty and achieved senior emeritus instructor status after 40 years of teaching. As a founding partner of Trowbridge Law Group, LLP, Gene's law practice concentrates on the syndication of commercial and investment real estate through both debt and equity, and his practice writes offerings under Rule 506B and 506C of Regulation D, also Regulation CF and Regulation A+. Yes, they covered all. As a former syndicator, he served as the sponsor of 16 investment groups by raising equity from investors through registered representatives in the broker-dealer community, and he once set out 1,676 K-1s in a single year. He has trained and mentored three different law partners in syndication and crowdfunding since 2008 and has delivered more than 250 live seminars on group ownership, exchanges, and taxation audiences across the country. And his articles have been published in various real estate media outlets and is a highly sought-after speaker on the subject of real estate group ownership, and also authored his first book, It's a Whole New Business, in 2005. Gene knows his stuff, and I have known Gene for a number of years. He has assisted and his firm has assisted on a number of syndications that we have put together, as well as for our students and members of our mastermind. And so it is always good to catch up with Gene to find out what he's up to and also get his take on what is happening in the private equity community, especially in light of our changing economy. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with none other than Gene Trowbridge. Gene, so good to see you again. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. It's been a long time. We've got a long history in the self-storage industry where I did all my syndications when I was an active syndicator before I went to the dark side and became an attorney. So I followed your career, and I think that's great. Congratulations.
Well, thanks, Gene. And we appreciate all of your assistance along the way on both ends. And so good to be able to see you again, and looking forward to the time when we can be back in the same room again together. But it has been a minute since we have. And I gave folks a little bit of your history, your bio, if you will, your background. And I know you've made a couple of pivots in the past 5 to 7 years or so. If you would, why don't you catch Storage Nation on what you've been up to recently? And then also, I want to do a little deeper dive into how you're seeing the private equity markets these days in light of what we're seeing in the economy and with inflation, and how that's affecting your line of work.
Okay. Well, sometimes partnerships outlive their usefulness. And I've been in a couple of those over the time, but I've always been the driver. I've always been the managing member. And so a couple of years ago, I decided to go out and do something a little bit different as I approach what I think will be, although my hashtag is not retiring, but I think I'm in the position where I'm going to probably think about retiring in the next 4 or 5 years. So there were some things I wanted to do. And so I went on, and now it's Trowbridge Law Group, and it's 6 of us having various virtual involvement in the firm. I have a law partner, Jonathan, in San Francisco. Carrie Dunn, my meeting partner, is in Nashville. My daughter, who does all of our website work, is in Los Angeles. We have IT fellow who's actually going to law school and working on his law degree, who's in Boston. And recently, our office manager moved from California to College Station, Texas. So now we're totally virtual all over the place, and I never get to see anyone, but that's okay. We're doing well. During the couple years of COVID that we had, our business grew every single year. So we're happy that happens, and I hope that that has continued to happen. One of the reasons I think our business has grown is that our clientele have developed large databases of people with whom they have a pre-existing relationship and a substantive relationship. For example, Scott, since 2014, my biggest client has done 160 offerings with me. And that's a sizable number, and raising between $8 and $10 million each offering, and doesn't take new investors in. Their investor pool is fixed. Their investor pool is set. He kind of knows exactly what's going to happen when he comes out to the market. He's got a specific product type, a specific type of clientele. So we're doing an awful lot of business with repeat clients now. I think I want to talk a little bit sometime here about how I'm a little concerned that as the age of our clients gets older and older, it's a little harder to make them invest new money into new deals. I mean, Scott, I'm 75 years old, and if you wanted me to invest in a deal that you thought you had a holding period of 5 to 7 years, I'd question that. I don't know if that's right for me. And there's all sorts of my clients who have people in this geriatric set, if you would, and maybe they're totally invested. I don't know. I do know that I'm having conversations with some of my clients about how do we get the people who really don't want to do any more deals? What do we do with them? One of the things they might do an exchange. Do you think in your business, has anyone dealt with the exchange issue at all, Scott?
Yeah, that is a very common question that has come up a lot, Gina. There's a whole lot of folks that took advantage of the gift that the market gave us with these very high valuations in all forms of real estate up until 75 days or so ago. And that many of those folks had 1031 exchanges that they were coming out of, or they had sold their own properties and wanting to now get in to either invest passively or just be a part of self-storage because it is doing so well, as it always does as we head into a recession. And the question is, do we accept those funds? And the answer is yes. However, if you're looking to take advantage of the tax benefits on the way out, that's going to be a little difficult, because unless all the investors in this syndicated, where there's multi-investor project, all decide to go together, then you're going to forfeit the benefit of the 1031 from a tax standpoint. And so we've investigated and talked about, and it's been a while since you and I have investigated this as well, but what do we do? Can you set up a TIC? There's many other folks that are looking at DSTs to be able to set up and multiple investors into one project. So glad you asked. Let's have a conversation about that. What does that look like when folks are coming out of a 1031 wanting to invest into a syndicated project and all things surrounding that?
Well, let's say that the LLC wants to do an exchange, and you hit one of the issues. The LLC would like to do an exchange, but maybe not all the individual investors want to do an exchange. And I have learned from someone, my neck of the woods, who's a pretty sophisticated exchange accommodator, a trick that what they say is, when you go to sell the property you're going to sell, that's going to be the down leg, know ahead of time who is not going to want to go into the next property, and actually set up 2 escrow instructions. One escrow instruction would be for the people who want to take their money out and be done with the investment. And another one is for the people who want to stay give their money to the accommodator and go into the next investment. And so in that case, you do away with some of the problems that you alluded to. The people who want to get their money out, well, they have a separate transaction, right? The people who want to stay in there have a separate transaction. And if it's done right and you structure it ahead of time, the feeling I have and the response I have from the people I know in the business is you can do that. And I think that's an answer for a lot of people who really don't want, who are old enough and don't want to put new money into a longer term investment. Well, their money's already in this investment. So if we can buy a bigger property, you can go from 600 doors to 1,000 doors. Well, why don't you do that? That sounds like a pretty good idea. You've got a good management team. You've got good experience. You've got investors that work well together. Why don't you do something like that? I think that's great. But as you know, the problem is I want to go out and buy a storage facility, and I'm in the middle of doing my syndication for this storage facility. And I get a call from someone who says, hey, Gene, I've got money coming out of an exchange. I'm tired of managing my own storage facilities. I'd like to be a passive investor in yours. And I've got about $2 million that I would like to invest in your offering. And you and I know that's trouble because 1031 says you have to go from real estate to real estate. And going into an LLC is not going into real estate. It is going into personal property. And so they can't actually do that. But my clients are so excited about someone with $2 million who'd like to invest in their new deal that they come to me and they want to know how to do it. And I would say every month, Scott, we are doing a tenant in common transaction. And I think it's a terrible way to own real estate. I was in the tenant in common business way back before 2008. And it's not a good way for multiple people to own real estate. It just isn't. But it does accomplish some goals. And if you can accomplish a goal for an investor and everyone understands what the downside might be, I think you can go ahead. Do you like doing tenants in common?
I don't. It's still a little cumbersome. It's hard to explain. And as you know, with our investors, if they are confused, a confused mind says no. And it right. It just seems to be a little cumbersome to be able to explain to them how they are taking ownership. And what we've found, and not everybody is maybe as transparent as we would like for when they say no, I think what they found is that they don't sense as if they truly have ownership. And even though they're passive, that they still don't have much control. And again, that's my take. Because once we explain what that looks like, we have more folks that aren't willing to go down that path. And so we haven't explored that. Maybe we should educate our list of investors and partners that want to come along with us as to more of what it looks like. But also, if we find that it's that difficult and it's hard for us to explain the benefits of it, if we don't believe in it wholeheartedly, then it's going to be difficult for us to be able to guide our folks. And so we, for that reason, we've stayed away up to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, I do one every month.
Yeah.
And it's always a big hitter who comes up to a client and says, I want to invest in your deal. And my client just simply doesn't want to turn down the money. So we go. Yeah. But if, in fact, there's a good continuity plan, one of the problems I have with syndication all along is continuity. Who is Scott? I've got the $100,000 you need for me to invest in your deal. But tell me, Scott, what happens if something happens to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one question.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Every investor should ask, where's the continuity plan? And mm-hmm. in tenant in common, it gets even a little more complicated. Because sometimes the tenant in common agreements, from the lender's standpoint, require a springing member. Well, what the hell is a springing member? Now you've got a tenant in common with a springing member. That's a corporation that no one knows anything about. It is a problem, but there's just an awful lot of gain out there that people want to defer. And so as long as 1031 is available to us, I think we're going to have to figure out ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. And at least minimize or explain to our folks, our investors, that says, hey, what happens if you do hit by the proverbial bus, Scott? Who's going to drive that bus and continue to create the value that you've stated in your projections? And well, first of all, the first line of defense for us is a key man life insurance policy, which will have a payout equal to a certain amount. And then second, we stress the fact to our investors that this isn't just Scott Myers, this is a team of folks. We have analysts and we have asset managers and we have folks that are driving the performance so that it isn't just myself. So when the initial plan is put in place and we've bought well, my team is carrying out the plan. Would it suffer perhaps if I do hit by the proverbial bus? Perhaps. I certainly hope not. But that is the way that we have tackled and handled that question to put some of our folks' mind at ease. And to this point, I don't get the question as much as we used to, Gene. And I think maybe it's because my list has heard me say that so many times. Our group of investors that hear that. So maybe it just doesn't come up.
And then congratulations. So you've educated them and they're comfortable with that. Well, I have been, Scott, I have been the replacement general partner or managing member of seven different transactions in my career where there was just one person. And of the seven, only one time was that caused by death. But I had a fellow who hit his head on a rock in Park City and became a quadriplegic. He laid upside down in traction for a year. Mm-hmm. I had bankruptcy, divorce, two divorces. And it's not always just the big D, the big death, but there's always something that you have to worry about. And I am quite convinced that in the offerings I write, there has to be one person after Scott who has the authority to sign documents with the bank.
Yep. A clear number two.
Mm-hmm. Clear number two. And the bank's like that too. Then that's something else. Was there something else that I thought we were going to talk about?
One of the things that I wanted to chat about, and maybe we can circle back to the 1031, but the deferred sales trust also continues to come up as an option for us to be able to raise capital and for our investors. There's pros and cons. We have not raised capital and set up a deferred sales trust. And so I wanted to hear from you. What are your thoughts? And perhaps maybe you can go through some of the pros and cons. And does it make sense? And are there applications for it? Or is this something we should stay away from?
No, I think it makes sense. I think there are terrific applications for it. My firm has stayed away from it. Mm-hmm. And only because the title Delaware Statutory Trust scares me away because I'm not licensed to practice in Delaware. Mm-hmm. So just right there, I'm not going to deal with the trust documents. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with the private placement memorandum that tells people that what you're going to invest in is a trust, but someone else is going to draft the trust. Mm-hmm. So there are only a few things you can do extremely well. And that's one of the things I've decided, not going to invest my time and energy to do that. I've gone to a million seminars and I can see where it applies. I think there's something out there, isn't there? Something on the web that says the seven deadly sins of statutory trust, and there is. Mm-hmm. And so you can see some of those things that causes a problem, but I just stay away from it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There you go.
If you're already investing in self-storage and you're looking to grow and scale your business, then you need to join the Self-Storage Mastermind. We formed the industry's first mastermind back in 2010, and we stacked it with the 1%ers across the country who specialize in acquisitions, development, and syndication. This exclusive group of storage rock stars meets once a quarter in private settings to combine business and VIP experiences that you won't find at any of the trade shows in Las Vegas or at the other copycat masterminds. So if you're looking to become part of an advanced community that openly shares best business practices, along with the largest pipeline of off-market deals and access to the top private equity resources, then you need to be in the room. So if you think you're a fit, then go to thestoragemastermind.com to apply. That's thestoragemastermind.com. And we'll see you on the inside.
Enough said. And after as many years in law practice and in syndication and raising private equity, I think that's sometimes the simplest answer is all that we need to hear from somebody who's seen it all, basically. So, Gene, we're seeing some changes in terms of tax law and also coming out of the SEC with regards to the accredited investor thresholds and the way that some of these investments, there was a threat that raising private equity may come to an end as we knew it with this current administration. And fortunately, some of that legislation was killed upon arrival. But what are some of the other changes that maybe we haven't heard of or that is coming down the pike that you are keeping an eye on that we need to be aware of?
If you go back to the Jobs Act, in 2012, the purpose of the Jobs Act was to promote capital formation, and it gave us 506C, where you could actually advertise in a private placement. You just had to take steps to be reasonably assured that your investors were accredited. And that has not proven to be the boon to money raising that everyone thought. The last statistics I saw that came out of 2001 was that the Regulation D, which is a business we're in, had $2 trillion of money raised in 2001, in the 12 months of 2021, excuse me, $2 trillion raised. And that dollar amount has gone up a couple hundred billion in the last 3 or 4 years, even through the period of COVID. But what's happened is the majority of money is raised in 506B offerings. There's only 10% of the money that's raised in 506C, which would let you go out and advertise. But most of the money is raised in 506B. And the reason for that is that while you and I know about how we do our private placement business, the majority of private placement offerings, Scott, are done by the broker-dealer community. And that's where I raised my money when I was a syndicator. It was quite a ride. But the broker-dealer community is made up of all sorts of licensed representatives who have Rolodexes and databases of people with whom they have a pre-existing substantive relationship. And they don't need to advertise. There's no need to do a dog and pony show and find new investors who want to advertise in your deal. It just isn't done. So I think what they did the last time was, meaning the SEC, they said, okay, we still recognize that 506C isn't going as fast as we thought, and we really do want to encourage accredited investors to invest and sponsors to look for accredited investors. So we're going to add some categories. Why? To promote capital formation. And so they added the category of certain stockbrokers. They added the category of people who are in a household relationship short being married. They added the rule for $5 million of assets, not net worth, but assets. So they're continuing to add categories of people who can be considered accredited. And that'll be good, but still good for the 506B offerings. I don't know if you've ever done a 506C. We do one out of every 10 deals as a 506C.
I would say that we've done quite a bit, probably closer to a 50-50 range. We used to be primarily 506B early on. Yeah, we've done quite a bit of the Cs in an effort to not only expand our reach. Well, that is the number one reason, is to be able to expand our reach and to be able to market a little more to grow the folks that we can actually put these deals in front of.
No, I think that's terrific. And one of the things that's happened in the last 6 months, and you've probably heard about it, maybe you even had someone talk about it on your podcast, is the combination of doing a 506B and a 506C in the same offering. As simple as can be, you draft the documents and you tell people we're going to do 506B until we run out of our pre-existing substantive relationships. And then we're going to switch to the same document in the same offering and go to a 506C, which has its own rules. Mm-hmm. And so what we tell our people is, when you get to that point that you're done with 506B, we're going to file a Form D with the SEC that from now on, this offering is 506C. Mm-hmm. And then we deal with the fact of the third-party accreditation. We'd have two different subscription agreements, one subscription agreement for when it's 506B and one subscription agreement for when it turns into 506C. And I found some acceptance of that in the marketplace as people are concerned that capital might not be as free flowing as it has been the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so they want to expand their market to new investors. So that's something that you should look at that.
Yeah, very interesting. And I've heard about this, somebody doing this one other time. And I'm glad that you brought this to light again. And I imagine the light bulb just went off for several folks that are listening here as well, because that is an interesting way to be able to raise capital, especially if you're exhausted and your capital raise begins to stall a little bit. So definitely appreciate that. Gene, tell us, what else should we be looking out for as we head into the balance of 2022 into 2023? You had mentioned in the beginning that you feel there's an awful lot of folks that have money that is invested. But in our realm, if history repeats itself, when folks are coming out of the stock market and they're looking for yield, they begin to look at a hard asset. And there are many advisors out there that will tout real estate as that. It should be an income producing asset. And as we head into a recession, self-storage typically is at the top of the heap. They benefit during a recession, as you know. So anything else that we should be prepared for to be able to capitalize on what we expect to be at least more eyeballs on our industry than we've seen in the past as we head into the balance of this year?
Well, I will tell you that I have a certain group of my clients who have a long history of doing multifamily, mm-hmm. who are now doing self-storage,
yep.
mobile home parks, and RV parks. And they're driven there for cash flow, current income, cap rates. But I find that interesting because you're supposed to, if you're raising money in a 506B, you're supposed to be raising money from people who you have a pre-existing relation who are sophisticated. Well, if I've been investing in apartment buildings all my life, and now my sponsor comes to me and said, hey, we're going to do self-storage. Whose responsibility is it to teach the investor the difference between apartment buildings and self-storage? I mean, you're sophisticated as an apartment building investor, but are you sophisticated as a self-storage investor? I certainly like self-storage more than I like RV parks. I like mobile home parks because it does solve the need for low-income housing, and there's quite a vibrant market out there for mobile home parks. But when I was doing self-storage, Scott, my plan was to build and sell. I would buy a piece of dirt. I'd have an offering that was to buy a specific piece of dirt, build the piece of dirt. While we're doing that, we're going to raise money in the same offering for another piece of dirt, kind of like a semi-specified offering. Then we find the second piece of dirt and we build it. And our goal was always to take the project to about 40 to 50% occupancy and then sell it to an operator. We were not in the business of operating storage. We were in the business of creating value and selling it. That's because my marketplace with the stock brokerage community, they were all people who they were all accredited. They were all $100,000, $200,000 investors. They had enough money to buy groceries every month. So their goal was to build their net worth, not their annual income. So that was a different way that I did than you're doing, I'm sure. But I think that we're going to see more self-storage. There's no question about it. I think interest rates are going to drive cap rates up. Mm-hmm. And if you can get a loan, I mean, the loan market is just crazy out there. You get a client in my interview, I say, okay, what's your loan parameters? And they tell me. And 2 weeks later, when I've got the documents done, they call me and say, oh, we don't have that loan anymore.
Yeah.
So you know that. So the loan issue is very, very important. And I think if you have a good relationship with some lenders, that's going to be very valuable mm-hmm. as you go forward.
Agreed. And we are, believe it or not, even on the development side, still receiving good rates and lender interest. Not all of these have gotten across the finish line into closing, to your point. And we certainly have had also our share of folks that presented not only a term sheet, but a loan commitment. And then, as you mentioned, stated that things have changed a little bit at the yes. bank. And so yeah. it's always good to have a few lenders that are interested in your project so that there is fallback should that happen. So again, a good reminder and affirmation for everybody out there that don't expect that the lender that has given you a term sheet and commitment is always the one that you're going to close with. And you should always be looking at multiple lenders. Well, Gene, it has been so good to catch up with you and looking forward to having you back again. We have a list of questions, but we are running out of time right now. In the meantime, what is the best way for people to reach you? For those that aren't watching online to see your contact information on the screen, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Our firm's website is www.trowbridgelawgroup.com. Our general phone number is 949-570-1507. So if you go to our website or you call that number, there's going to be someone who's going to pay attention to you, and they're going to get you to me or Jonathan or whoever the right person in the company is. And I want to stress my YouTube channel. It's called Trowbridge Law. And I don't know if you've gone there at all, but we're very, very active in YouTube broadcasts, and we get a lot of people who watch our stuff, and it always amazes me. There's a lot of things that I knew when I was a syndicator that I now know that I'm an attorney, and I now know that what's old is new again. You know, it's the same. You mean you want me to talk about that again? Okay. So, but that's the same thing. You do your workshops and everything, and you wonder how many times do you have to tell them the same thing?
And sometimes it's just affirmation, Gene, that we need to come back to the basic. And we tend to make some things so difficult when it is just a reminder of the foundational principles of each and every business or industry out there, and that we can't lose sight of that. Everybody's looking for an edge or a newfangled way of approaching things. And some of the tried and true ways are really just the basic blocking and tackling still works.
No, I think that's the truth. And you hopefully will be getting new people coming to you who want to be educated in the sponsorship of storage facility offerings. And that's good.
And we do. And we will send them over to you for you to explain to them just exactly how it's done. And so that you can do your education and show them the blocking and tackling that they need to understand on the syndication side.
Oh my God. You mean it's a security?
You mean my buddies all coming in and making decisions together? That constitutes a security? Yeah, that too.
Yeah, that too. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks. I love the color of your shirt. I'd love to know what's under your hat, but you're probably not going to share that with me.
Well, it's just a brand, and it's a brand. Live Lucky underneath. It's from Black Clover. And what's underneath isn't as attractive as it used to be 25 years ago. So now we need to put something else on top.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Well, that's long stories.
Without a doubt. Gene, once again, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate being able to catch up. And folks, if you do have a question, and before you approach raising capital with anybody for any reason, you need to get help. But Gene is the man, and Trowbridge Law Group is the company. So reach out to him. They will take very good care of you. I can vouch for it. So with that, thanks again, Gene. And for the rest of you, we will see you all on the next episode. Take care.
Hey, gang, wait. Three things before you leave. First, don't forget to subscribe to the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram, and don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit the following subscribe button on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us. Take care.